Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we start today's podcast, a quick heads up on Sheerluxe's VIP Club. From restaurants, bars and hotels to beauty, wellness and shopping, Sheerluxe partners with some of London's best destinations and hottest brands to bring its VIPs exclusive monthly offers. So why not sign up? It'll cost you just £5 a month or £50 for the year. Use your card once or twice and you'll have made that amount back in no time. For more information, visit sheerluxevip.com.
Welcome to the Sheerluxe Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by Heather Steele, Becky Hull, and Pascal Day. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
It's been a few weeks since we've recommended TV, film, podcast. I have loads to talk about. What has everybody else been watching, listening to, etc.?
So I have been watching quite a rogue one again for me, but it's The World's Most Extraordinary Homes on Netflix, and it's with architect Piers Taylor and Caroline Quintin.
Oh, I saw it when it was on the Beeb over Christmas. I loved it.
It's so addictive, isn't it? I think there's that kind of balance of sneaking into people's houses and seeing how incredible they are, and also just admiring amazing architecture across the world. Mm. It's called Season 2 Part B, and there is the most incredible one in Norway, and it is literally in the middle of nowhere. It is just beautiful, and basically, as I was saying, you see all this incredible architecture that they've done. You get to meet the architect, you get to have a nose, you get to scoop around the houses. It's just a nice bit of TV escapism at its best.
It's like Grand Designs.
It's like Grand Designs, but very chic.
And all over the world.
Kevin
MacLeod.
No Kevin MacLeod features.
I feel as well, you don't see the build itself either, do you? So it is just more about the homes themselves and the interiors, not necessarily just about, like, this is how we created the
exactly.
home.
It's more like you just get to have a proper walk around, see what it's like, what it would be like to live there. It's just utterly fascinating. It doesn't sound like much, but I promise you, you'll be so addicted when you watch it.
Because I feel like with Grand Designs, most people watch it and you just really want the result.
I think that's what's quite nice. You've got the end result, so you're just in it straight away. But we've seen them all now. I literally binged over the weekend, but I really recommend watching Norway. It is just stunning. And if that doesn't make you want to go to Norway, I don't know what will.
Is that what the episode's called?
Yeah, so they're all just done by the places. You've got in the second series, India, Spain, Norway and Israel. But they're all absolutely stunning. It was just Norway. It's a particular standout for me.
Ooh. Oh, I just love those programs where, like, people do over their houses. Like, my boyfriend keeps watching these videos in bed where it's like people make homes out of, like, storage containers and, like, put them together.
It's like a new thing, like IKEA homes.
It's insane.
I totally get one. Our housing solution to the crisis that's going on in the country is just to create all these homes.
They are amazing.
I've already bored Pascal and Becky with this, but speaking of property programs, two of my friends were on George Clark's Old House New Home on Channel 4, and I hadn't seen that one before, but again, I'm the same as you, Becky, love a property program.
What happens on Old House New Home?
So they usually focus on two couples or families who buy an old, sort of usually a Regency or sort of Victorian house, or one where there are restrictions in place, and then with the help of George you can recreate it and make it modern. So how we create modern spaces in old buildings.
Cool.
My friends did it in Margate, and I knew that they bought this place, but it was amazing actually watching it on TV because none of us, like, friends-wise had actually seen it.
So it's a period property when? What does it look like?
Yeah, so it's a Victorian sort of semi-detached, and there used to be 5 rooms on the ground floor, and they've knocked through all of them, so it's just this huge sort of space with lots of glass at the back. So, really modern. From the front, you wouldn't really be able to tell because it's got all the period details outside, but they've got, like, the most dream-worthy kitchen and a huge sort of diner slash open all the doors and eat outside. And they had a housewarming party on Saturday, which we went to, but unfortunately it rained the entire time, so everyone naturally was in the kitchen. But luckily, it was huge, so it was fine.
Okay, well, do you have a look at the world's most extraordinary homes? I know I'm going to be watching that. Thanks, Becky. I have another recommendation on Netflix, which is The Great Hack.
Oh, I'm desperate to watch this.
It's so good. So it is a two-hour documentary about what happened with Cambridge Analytica and with both the Trump election and Brexit and numerous other votes across the world, and how Cambridge Analytica mined our data in order to influence those elections, which we kind of already know, but it looks at it from the perspective of multiple different people, one of whom is a man called David Carroll, and he is a media professor, and he is the guy who sued Cambridge Analytica to try and retrieve his data. So he was basically like, okay, that's cool, you've used my data, I just want to know what that included. So it kind of follows him and his attempt to get that data back, and it mainly follows a lady called Brittany Kaiser, who was a director at Cambridge Analytica, and it follows her kind of through all the depositions when, like, the shit hit the fan, and it's kind of a bit of a look at her personality, and there's obviously like a big moral question about what happened. And then it also follows a lady called Carol Cadwallader, who is a Guardian journalist. She was a Guardian features writer, and then basically got kind of turned on to this whole issue and found the first whistleblower, who was a guy who had been one of the founding members of the Cambridge Analytica, and she has since been Pulitzer Prize nominated for her investigative work about Cambridge Analytica and what they did. So it basically breaks down exactly what it takes to influence an election in the way that arguably Cambridge Analytica did. So basically, the short of it is that media companies, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Google or Amazon, have over 70,000 data points on every single person in this world. And the scariest bit about it is they don't just use those data points to build a profile on your habits. It's about your personality. So they can deduce anybody in the world, anyone in any given country, into a particular personality category based on their data points, which they can then use to influence those people. So the way it worked with, let's say, the Leave campaign is they don't target the people who are definitely going to be Leave or definitely going to be Remain. They target the margin in between, the people who are undecided. They use the data points that they have to analyze what their personalities might be like, and then they specifically go after those people with targeted content. So basically, the point of the whole thing is it explains what happens, explains how they did it, and it explains why basically data rights should be considered human rights now. But I can't explain, it is the most fascinating watch. And as a follow-up, I listened to Carol Cadwallader's TED talk as well, which is available on the podcast app and is really worth listening to, because the facts and figures in this documentary are horrifying, but her kind of rallying cry in this TED talk is like spine tingling. It is so scary. So
it is mad, isn't it?
That's scary.
It does scare me.
It is mad.
God, I'm gonna watch that.
So that Kaiser woman, she's bad.
So that's a kind of grey area, and also that's why it kind of becomes a bit of an analysis about her and the morality of it, because she basically came forward, arguably she jumped before she was pushed, to be like a inverted commas whistleblower. So before,
that's what I thought she was.
Yeah, so, well, she the one who'd gone into hiding or saying that she's had to sort
she went
of
into
hide after.
Exactly. Yeah. She like went into hiding in Thailand, and then she flew back to be like, I'm gonna confess everything, you know, I'm gonna explain what we did, so I've got nothing to hide. But then stuff, I won't ruin it, but stuff emerges about people she was meeting with and countries she was meeting with, and it's up to you to decide whether you think she's kind of a goodie or a baddie, but she kind of has her own personal circumstances that might lead to why she did these things. So yeah, there's also that kind of personality element going on in the documentary too.
I'm down for it. I'm definitely going to watch that this weekend.
Heather, there's a book that you have read and that you kindly lent to me, and I was away this weekend and I devoured it in 48 hours.
You read it all?
I read it all. I absolutely loved it.
So it's Three Women by Lisa Tadeo, who is a US journalist who essentially spent 10 years interviewing and following hundreds of subjects and then eventually settled on these three women who are across various different states in the US in very different circumstances. And the result is a non-fiction book that focuses on all three women at separate times, but don't you think it reads like fiction? It was so gripping. The way she writes is so beautiful that I felt like I was reading short stories about these women.
If it was fiction, then my only criticism of it would be this is too unrealistic. I'd be like, this is just silly, this would never happen. So the fact that these are the true stories of these women is what completely makes it, takes it from being a 90% book to an 100%, because it's got that validity.
Yeah, so one of the women was discovered by Lisa because she was in a trial where she'd accused her teacher of having an affair with her when she was 17. Now, when the book was written, she was 23 years old and the teacher had just been nominated North Dakota's Teacher of the Year. And I think after years of all this misery, because they weren't in a relationship anymore, but she still obviously clearly had feelings for him. But I think when she finally saw that he'd, you know, really moved on with his life and was now getting all this acclaim, and she was older and realised actually that what he did was wrong.
Yeah, I think it was more that she came to the realisation at an age that it was abusive.
Exactly.
Or manipulative at the very least.
Exactly. So yeah, she took him to court, and it says straight up, so it's not revealing anything, but yeah, she was not believed at all. They believed the man over her. So even that story in itself is so interesting about who we choose to believe based on age and circumstances and family circumstances. And there's so much evidence against him, but yeah, he was found not guilty.
It's our prejudices, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the point she's trying to make towards the end of the book is that we should all be less judgmental, especially women towards other women. Mm-hmm. We should definitely cut each other a bit of slack.
So the other two women, the second is a lady who is kind of ended up in a bit of a loveless marriage, isn't really sure how she got there. So again, this isn't a spoiler, has an affair with her high school boyfriend. And then the third is a woman who kind of seemingly had it all, life of great privilege, ended up marrying a guy. And the theme that dominates their marriage is that he likes to watch her have sex with other men. And that's just like their thing. And sometimes it's threesomes, but more often than not, it's just her with another man. He's either there watching or she's sending him videos. Whatever. Yeah. So that's kind of what I mean about the far-fetchedness of it. But what I want to know, like, there's a lot of really explicit sex in there.
Yeah.
And it's not just explicit, it's really detailed. Like, I want to know how... I know she spent 8 years with these women, but how did she get... Is it true? Like,
so the most explicit sex scenes are with Lena. So that's the lady who's having the affair with her high school boyfriend. And Lena was just so open with her. So Lisa was living in the area while she was kind of following her around, so to speak. And after Lena had had sex and Aiden, which is the high school boyfriend, had sort of driven off, Lena would call Lisa straight away and say, "This is exactly what happened." And then Lisa would drive there once she'd left just to be like, "What's the temperature like? How dark is it? Wow. What did it look like?" Wherever they'd been, whether it was a motel room or they used to drive to this sort of swampy area. She'd drive straight there to like just take in the sights and sounds and smells just so she could really get that.
Take it these are pseudonyms.
No. So only Sloane's is a pseudonym.
Because I've tried to find these women.
Straight away, if you Google Aaron Nodal, which is the teacher's name, everything comes up. Because that's the first thing I did once I finished the book. I needed to know.
And Lena's a real person as well.
Lena's a real person. Aiden's a real person.
Oh, but it's brilliant. Yeah. It's not like anything I've ever read before.
Yeah, it's such a journalistic feat to have dedicated so much of your time to uncovering this. Because originally she wanted to write about male desire, but she said that she interviewed so many men and theirs was all exactly the same. Yeah. Like there was only one route and one destination. Yeah. Whereas with the women it was so complex that she
can imagine.
And she said the reason she chose those three women is this is all in like the intro, is because each one of them is relatable. And I said I won't tell you which one, but there was one that I was like, fuck yeah, I really relate to this person because it goes so deep. It gets so uncomfortable in how people feel and how women feel and why you do certain things. And I reckon everybody can relate to one of them, you know, sleeping with multiple men is like, you know, it's more
perhaps
about why
not for the rest.
It's about what drives people and why women behave in that certain way. And just brilliant. And just really quickly, I just want to say something. I've got a book that I've got arriving today is Educated by Tara Westover.
Can I borrow that after you? Because that's on my list.
So I listened to an Oprah podcast with her yesterday. Yeah. She's done a special with her Super Soul podcast. And she is basically a lady who was brought up in the Mormon community, as in she went to the Brigham Young College, which is like a Mormon college, but that was her first time she'd ever set foot in a classroom when she was 17. And like an unbelievably strict education and background. When she first got to university, she hadn't heard of the Holocaust. She hadn't heard of Martin Luther King. I mean, completely sheltered. Yeah. And I mean, she went on to be Harvard educated, Oxford educated, and she's obviously written this memoir now. But just listening to the interview, I was, you know, when you buy something on Amazon and you're listening to something. So I'm excited to read that. And I really recommend the Oprah conversation with her. Becky, it's your time to shine. We're going to talk about your ultimate A to Z glossary of beauty terminology. I loved this feature so much. You have literally broken down the entire alphabet with beauty terminology that we should know. So can we address some of the more complicated things?
I think, do you know what? I'm going to start with one that you guys might not think is complicated, but I always feel like people ask me about this. And to be honest with you, I was still a bit confused by paraben free. Mm. I don't know if you guys are, but...
I feel like you explained this really well when on the show you did vegan beauty.
Yeah, I think it comes up all the time. Like you keep hearing about,
oh, it's paraben free. And so many of my friends are like, I don't get what you're on about. Put simply, parabens are like the most widely used preservative in beauty products, which on the surface isn't actually an issue, but they have been linked to cancer quite definitely.
Well, like skin cancer.
Yeah, and breast cancer.
Full carcinogenic.
Yeah, and basically that is the point. Having said that, what is worth noting with parabens is there is the teeniest, tiniest amount in your products. That is what you should take away from it. But if you do want to strip it back and you don't want any of that near you, luckily now there are more and more paraben-free products hitting the shelves. And basically parabens just make sure things last longer. It means your SPF lasts longer. It just goes the distance more. But you don't need it. You do not need parabens.
I was going to say, if we follow the advice we're always given but probably don't follow about you should throw things away after 3 months anyway, then technically you probably shouldn't need parabens.
Well,
anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the point. I think people are just so much savvier with it now. But that is why you should be looking for paraben-free if it's something that bothers you.
So are there any brands in particular that do great paraben-free products or any specific things that we should be, that are really easy swaps to make?
I think so. So basically, e.l.f. Cosmetics are known for having a whole paraben-free range, and there are some really nice products in there, and they're affordable. You won't find much over like £40 with e.l.f., which I know sounds a lot, but on the surface, what you're getting is products that last you ages. They're, you know, sulfate-free, paraben-free.
And where can you buy e.l.f.?
So you can get e.l.f. anywhere from sort of Boots, Superdrug, or you can get it on elfcosmetics.co.uk. And then I've also put down Davine's Haircare, which is really up and coming. It is completely eco-friendly. Again, paraben-free, sulfate-free. They have the most stripped-back formulas, but the products are incredible. They're so nourishing for your hair, and they only use recyclable packaging.
Does it make it more expensive?
No, not at all. I mean, the thing is, parabens have been put in, as I said, just to preserve your products, but it doesn't actually make, in terms of the cost and everything, it's not costing more to put that in. So it should have no impact on how much you're paying.
Right, next one. Bakuchiol. We'll just spell that out, shall we? It is B-A-K-U-C-H-I-O-L.
Yeah. So basically, this is a new plant-based retinol alternative. Brilliant for pregnant women, because pregnant women should not be using retinol. And it really has taken off this year. It was actually one of the biggest buzzwords for 2019, and it was one of the biggest trends on Pinterest. But the idea is it just doesn't take its toll on your skin as much as retinol, because it's incredibly harsh, the original vitamin A. So this is completely stripped back, and it doesn't have, you know, it's not going to overly sensitize your skin. It's got loads of antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties, so you're not going to have that same harsh reaction, but you are still going to get the smoothing effects. It's really worth trying, and I've put down the Inky list, but another one is BB Beauty. They're incredible.
Okay, and what else have we got? Mandelic?
So Mandelic is actually one of the best AHAs. It's really similar to lactic acid, and again, it's still an exfoliant, but both lactic and mandelic are known for being really, really gentle. So if you're new to like the AHA game, they're the two you should look out for, because the molecule size is like much bigger than glycolic, which basically means it doesn't penetrate so deeply. So you're just getting really gentle effects.
It really is a science, isn't it?
Really,
maybe this
is
why I can't get my head around beauty.
But then that's also why it makes sense as to why products don't work on everyone. I mean, that's why technically, I guess, we should all just be going to a dermatologist or whoever who can tell us exactly what we should be using, because everyone's different.
Everyone is so different. But I mean, I use the Dr. Dennis Gross peel pads, and they've got mandelic and lactic acid. And they do something. I mean, you're not going to get the same peeling results, but it definitely, for sensitive skin types, look no further.
Good to know. Thanks, Becky. Okay, if there was one term on this list that you think that people ask you about a lot, that always stands out as like a big one that people need to know about, what is it?
I mean, there's several. I think paraben-free and sulfate-free are very much worth knowing about. But the one that I get asked about a lot is, what is dermatologically tested? What does that mean? And literally, in its simplest form, it means that a dermatologist has tried, tested, and approved it.
But surely, like, any beauty brand worth its salt would be checking its products with a dermatologist.
Yeah, but then not many are, especially skincare. You'll find that on the labels, I mean, most are now, but there are a few that slip.
And what about, would makeup say that as well?
No, it's more really in skincare. Definitely more in skincare, but the amount of times people have been like, I don't know what that means. That is all it means.
Finally, I have one last question.
Yeah.
Q is for quercetin.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a quirky one. So this is popping up in way more products now. And again, it's just known to fight free radicals, pollution, UV damage. And that is all because it's really high of anti-inflammatories.
Please may I ask what free radicals are?
Free radicals are the main cause of aging.
Right.
And that is from the the environment, basically. It's pollution. It's when you're a city slicker, but it's generally the aging environment.
Okay,
it's
cool,
free
thank
radicals.
You.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, let's talk a bit more beauty. There's quite a lot of beauty coming up, Becky.
I'm ready and raring.
We're going to talk about different beauty destinations to try in London. You wrote a piece on some new things, some that are quite grammable, some that are quirky again. So what made the cut?
So we've got a nice little collection here. I've just done 7. I think actually one of my favourites, which is right at the top, is Face Spa London. Now this is owned by makeup artist Nicola Fiveash, and she used to work under Chanel's head makeup artist Lucia Pica. So she is incredibly trained. She is amazing at what she does. And the idea of it is you literally pop in and just have really quick makeup fixes done to your face, or you can have a full face of makeup. But I think actually what inspired me was I saw someone who went for her hen do the other day, and she had been, and she said it was just so nice to pop in, get your makeup done, and not feel like you're at a stuffy counter in Debenhams.
Yeah, I feel like that's what a lot of people want, isn't it? To have their makeup
completely
done just quick and easy.
And it's quick. I think you can, it starts from just £20, which on the surface might sound more than you'd like to pay for some people, but I think if it's for a special occasion,
definitely.
It's so worth it. And as I said, she has worked with some of the best names in the biz, so she is well worth seeking out.
It's not always her, presumably, because you've got people.
No, there's other people, but I would recommend if say it is for a hen do or really special occasion, try and seek out Nicola, just because she gives you like amazing recommendations. She's very thorough, and it feels like you're really getting what you pay for.
I would totally do that.
Yeah, I would definitely do that.
Too.
I would do it for someone else's hen do.
And also, presumably, she uses products from all different brands.
Exactly.
That's the problem. If you go to a specific counter, then it might be fine, but they're only using their own products and they're trying to push them, whereas this is neutral territory.
You get a real mix, and she'll talk about what suits you. Yeah, I think that's what's nice. It doesn't feel so suffocatingly small, the area of what you can pick.
And I just don't always trust the people at those counters to know what they're doing.
Yeah, completely.
And just like, they just don't seem very good sometimes.
No.
Like,
have you done that?
I haven't done it, but I went with my friend who was trying to get some tips on having her wedding makeup done, and we went to this woman in our hometown, Debenhams. My friend was like, no, this isn't what I want. And she was like, well, I think that looks good. And it was very much like, okay.
Adoption, yeah.
And it was just very nothing-y. Like, she came away and I was like, you don't really look any different.
Better than coming out looking like you.
Too much. It just was like, are you actually trained in this? And then the other girl that was there was in college, and it's like, well, you're not trained.
And also the thing is, if you're doing something and you want to be able to recreate it yourself, that could be a fortune, because if you're signing at Bobbi Brown, Bobbi Brown's incredible. If you're at the Bobbi Brown counter and they're just putting, that could be like a couple of £100 worth of makeup if you want to recreate the whole look. So at least if you're somewhere, they can, presumably she can recommend some more affordable substitutes for things. Like, that's a good position to be in.
I really recommend it. I've also put on House of Lady Muck.
Oh yeah, I like that one.
Nude Topshop's Oxford Circus. So they always have kind of regular pop-ups in different places, but this is their new detailed fine nail art. Pascal, I feel like you'd absolutely love it.
Yeah,
and it's not, it's a heavy nail art. It's really detailed, really pretty, very chic, and the place as a whole is gorge, obviously. Get your
phone. And it's really speedy as well.
Very speedy. Is it expensive? Again, prices are really reasonable, and it's like a quick fix. It's a bit like a kind of cheeky, no cowshed offspring. It's like that.
That's like
what
fun.
I'd say.
more fun.
Nail art is having a bit of a moment.
Oh my god,
isn't it?
It's having such a moment. Isn't and that I think funny? I think it is funny because you remember there was a time where people were like, oh, not nail art, but I think it's so detailed and so chic and minimal now. Mm. You only catch it in the corner of your eye, so it's just like it's like an accessory. It's like an extension of jewelry.
Yeah, that's so
it's
true.
So nice.
Okay, so that's in Oxford Circus Topshop now.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Glow Bar for a minute?
Let's talk about Glow Bar.
We, as part of a series that we ran with the Outnet on successful women entrepreneurs, we went to visit Sasha, who founded the Glow Bar at the space, and it's really cool. The premise, isn't it?
It is incredibly cool. Again, very grammable, very chic. But I think what they've done and the idea of using sauna pods is incredible.
Yeah. So basically, on the premises are infrared saunas, and it gives you like a deep cleanse from the inside out. So you're in there for a lot longer than you would be a normal sauna. It's like 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But it basically gets you to a point, an optimal body temperature to sweat, like a deep sweat, like you would get from a really hard workout class. So she said it releases endorphins in the same way that an exercise class would, but
exactly
without having to do it.
Well, that sounds great.
Again, Heather, you'd love this.
You say that. I don't really like normal saunas because I feel rather faint. So is it a high temp?
No, it's the opposite. Oh, so fine. That's why you can be in there for so long. It's a more moderate temperature.
It's infrared, yeah.
In that case, yes, I would love it. Sorry.
And it boosts your circulation and it can alleviate like back joint pain.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's quite satisfying.
She said that people often, when they come out, you know, they'll use a towel and it's like a bit brown, the towel, because it's literally like deep cleanse.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. And she's also quite into to kind of crystal healing and the power of different herbs and things, isn't she? So, so there's a cafe upstairs.
Oh, yeah, with their sort of superfood bowls.
Exactly.
And, yeah, juices. Yeah. Exactly. It's very wellness pop-up kind of place to go.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, you're right. That does sound right up my street.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And anywhere else to recommend?
I'd love to recommend Ralph and Rice, actually. So after just talking about Davines, the hair care brand, in my little glossary A to Z, Ralph and Rice is East London's sort of sustainability salon. And I think what I love about this is they have been really environmentally conscious. So you use disposable towels there that are made out of recycled and recyclable waffled paper. The idea is that when you buy the hair care products they use, you take them back in and you get refills.
That's a good idea.
So they have literally thought of everything, but without compromising on style or anything like that. It's got that kind of shabby chic vibe. It's quite cool. It's a really nice new salon to try if you are definitely on the more sustainable side.
And price point?
Price point anywhere from sort of £45 up, but I really recommend checking it out. And also the inside of the salon was designed using cork. And the idea of that is it doesn't harm the trees.
Okay, cool. Well, if you are looking for more recommendations of fun or different or quirky destinations in London for beauty, then do have a look at the piece on the site. Would you ditch drinks for a fitness date with exercise on the rise and casual drinking on the slide? The fitness date is the perfect combination for active singles looking for love and keen to stay healthy. Pascal, this has got your name all over it. So tell me, would you ditch drinks for a fitness date? I feel like I know the answer to this question.
No. Of course I wouldn't.
So where did this come from? Is this like really a trend? Are people doing this?
Apparently so. I got sent an email, you know, with all the stats and stuff in it. But it is more like people going on like hiking dates. Not so much going to holding hands on like a on a treadmill or anything like that. I don't know, I just think it sounds truly awful.
So what is a dream for, I know you've been in a relationship for quite a while, but what is a good first date? I presume this is the first date, this is like early stages of dating situation. So what is your idea of a good date?
Probably just something where someone buys me a lot of food is my dream. When me and my partner went out on our first proper date, we'd gone to a party the night before and someone had a swimming pool. I went and had a few drinks. I don't recommend drinking or swimming at all, but I was kind of like, oh, I'm going to show off and I'm going to show how good at swimming I am.
That is sort of a fitness date. There is sports activity involved in your birthday. Carry on.
So I jumped into this pool and then I just swam straight into the wall. And and it was fine that night. But the next day I woke up and I just had this scab right down my face. Like, and then we went out for dinner the next day and I was just like, I just know you're looking at my face, scab. Like, it was really bad. So don't go swimming on a first date, I would say. But I don't know. I can totally imagine gyms actually setting up date nights.
Ooh, like speed dating
classes
in the gym.
For singles, yeah. Which would be my idea of hell.
Mm. Fair. So, yeah. Heather, did you go on a gym date?
Not a gym date, no. Again, when I first started reading it, I was just like, no, no, no. I can't imagine anything worse. I look awful in a gym kit because I just can't be bothered to keep updating it with stuff that actually looks half decent. And because I'm so pale, I'd go really bright red and really sweaty. So I'd just look awful.
I wouldn't be able to talk either. I'd be too puffed out.
Exactly. Yeah, I think just all in all, it wouldn't be a good first impression. But then as I started reading it, I would definitely go on a first date where you like grab a coffee and then go for a really long walk somewhere. I'd be well up for that.
We talked a lot about how walking meetings are a good thing, and it's because you don't have to kind of make direct eye contact. It's a lot easier for chat to just flow. So therefore, surely that should be applied to dates as well.
Exactly. You could point things out. You're obviously walking past lots of different things. So yeah, if a lull begins, you can, you know, very easily pick the conversation back up. But depending on where you were walking, obviously, if like Pascal said, you were going for a hike, there's kind of, you've got to stick with it. But if you were just walking around a nice like Victoria Park or something like that, if the date wasn't going great, there's a kind of a natural quite quick, if you want, end point, so you could, you know, zoom off.
That's
if
true.
It wasn't going well,
because that's the only thing, it's quite easy to get out of a normal date, whereas like, you know, you can just be like, oh, someone's calling me. But if you're like stuck in the middle of a park, Becky, what about you?
I mean, guys, you know I love a little weekend walk. I'm all here for
you're a wrangler.
I'm into bit like you, Heather. I love a long walk. I'm here for that. But you would never get me on a spinning class on a date. Like, sorry, no one needs to see that. Mm. Not on your first few dates. I'll save that for when we've been together for like 10 years. Do you know what I mean? Mm. No one needs
to see
me. And
maybe not even then.
Maybe not even then. No one needs to see me red, sweating, drip. Because then what have you got? Do you know what I mean?
What are you left with?
If you went out afterwards, especially if you went to like a nicer gym, you'd spend ages getting ready to then go for a meal or something. And they'd just be like,
for me,
where are you?
It's too much. But having said that, I'd be down for like a little punting or something.
Oh, cute.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I thought, why not?
Or like bowling.
Yes.
Yeah, bowling counts. Yeah, that's a good one.
I like bowling. I have to say I'm completely different to you lot, and I actually love the idea of doing a proper... So I don't like walking. I really don't. I like being sedentary or doing like really hardcore exercise. Yeah. I don't like much in between. I love a gym class. I wouldn't just like go to the gym with someone. That would be weird.
Yeah, that's
weird. Like a soul cycle class or, like a cobalt. I think you want to pick a class where you can kind of show off but not die. So like spinning is perfect because spinning, you control how hard you're going.
Yeah, very
true. You can make it look like you're working really hard, but you don't have to really, really be out of breath and dying. So I think tactically picking your class is wise.
But it's not really a date if you can't talk to someone. Like in a spin class, you can't be like, oh, how's it going?
No, they're definitely, how are you doing? Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah. It's not going
to
work.
No, but I think there has to be like a coffee or something either side of it, a smoothie, some kind of health drink either side. But I think the idea of doing an activity is really great, and actually if that's something that's a big part of your life, like for Ben and I, that is quite a big part of our life, so that would be quite a good bonding thing rather than just talking about it. Like if you are having an awkward first date and you're like, so I like spinning, you know, it gives you the opportunity to like, I don't know, you can chat about the class afterwards, the music,
it's definitely an icebreaker.
Also, another thing is not everybody drinks. That is the other thing that we often forget, that not everybody drinks. So
very
if you're not boozy, then it's quite a good alternative.
Very good alternative.
Any other suggestions for things that are good date ideas that aren't sporty and aren't boozy? Niche, I know.
Quiz golf?
So like that's as sporty as bowling, but it's not like strenuous, is
it? Pascal, maybe we would be into sport.
I think you're more into sport dating than anything you are. What about like a class? Is that weird? Is it weird to go and do like, I think if a guy said to me like, let's go and do some pottery, I'd think that's quite
nice.
I'd
love that. Yeah, if I got us to go plate painting or something.
Yeah, a bit of like the ghost thing.
There's a local, it's not paint me pottery, but like painting thing on my high street, and they on Thursday night, they're open till 9 and they have live music and they have wine.
That's nice.
That's a good day.
That's what I did for my birthday this year. I took my friends, we went and painted plates, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
I also feel like that's having a renaissance because this whole like mismatched plate thing is really in now, and it's all about like hand painted.
You wouldn't just want one before, would you? Like, my one plate.
So true. Exactly, but now.
And you could laugh about it if it was rubbish. Could make jokes out of it. Fine.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's a good idea, actually. Yeah. And like life drawing classes and stuff like that. Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah. Or like a museum.
On my first date with my boyfriend, we went to the Hunterian Museum, which is in Holborn, and it's just got loads of body parts. hearts in jars because it's a medical museum and it's but it was really interesting.
It's quite macabre. I thought you were going to say you went to like the National Gallery.
No, but that's why it was interesting because you could just walk and look at all these strange things and kind of
talk. Who suggested
it? Yeah,
that?
Me.
Okay, fine. Because I have to say, if a guy suggested that to me, I'd be like screenshotting to the girls.
Yeah,
like,
great.
Yeah. No offense, like I think it's really cool, but I think a creepy suggestion from a man.
Yeah, I think because I knew him before, it probably was. It wasn't like a bloke out of the blue. Like, fine, do you want to go look at some stuff in jars?
Yeah.
No, none of that.
But you knew that he'd be interested.
And he'd mentioned having been himself before. But yeah, again, I think if you did go to a gallery, it's quite hushed there, so you can't really talk. Whereas if you go somewhere where it's sort of a bit more interactive or got talking points, that's another good thing.
Yeah.
Me and Ollie went to Prague when we first got together, and we went to the torture museum there and then the sex museum straight afterwards, and they're basically the same thing, like exactly the same. I was like, are we still in the same museum?
That's not okay.
No, it was weird. There was one man who was wearing this big puffer jacket and he just like kept pulling out his like camera and being like, God, taking pictures. Yeah, I was like, this isn't good.
Well, I feel like both your museum trips took a slight turn for the worse.
Hey, I love mine. It's still together.
It worked out.
Personally, I think that V&A is more up my street, but anyway, sure. Each to their own. Okay, well, if you are wondering whether a fitness day or otherwise is just look at the lifestyle content. There's loads of ideas. Okay, we're going to revisit the topic of Hindus now. I know we've talked about them quite a lot on the podcast before, but we wrote a piece on how to organise a stress-free hen. And Heather, are you in the midst of organising one?
I am at the end of September.
So I thought we could just run through the tips in this piece and share our wisdom. So how's it going?
It's going all right, actually, almost too well, because it's approaching and there haven't been any sort of
dramas yet.
So I'm waiting for that to happen, really. And I think, obviously, the closer we get to the date, just booking a few last-minute things now, so I'm just worried that all of a sudden the costs are going to escalate slightly and I'll be the one who's arranged it. I'm arranging it on my own, essentially, because I'm the only bridesmaid and I don't really know many other people going on the hen do, so it's a bit of a solo mission.
That's hard. Yeah, that's really hard.
But thankfully, it's in London and nobody else lives here, so I feel like I've got it covered. It's my job to know where a good place is to go eat and drink and do things. So
yeah, I'd love you to organise my hen.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got the accommodation. But we book that, like the piece said, get organised early. So we booked that at the beginning of the year. We're staying in an Airbnb, a nice one. Mm-hmm. So that's all organised. The girls have booked their train tickets from Grimsby. That's okay. That's all done and paid for. Booked the main activity. That's all done. So there's just now I've booked the restaurants and things, but it's just
finalize
a few little
it, yeah.
things. Because I've tried, again, the piece says, like, don't overdo it. Because it is London, mm-hmm. we're going to be travelling around a little bit as a group.
Yes.
I tried not to pack it too much because I think when I first did, like, oh, we could do this and we could go here and we could do this. Actually, when I thought about it, it was like, us doing all of that's going to be too much. And I've actually factored in a lot of getting ready time before going out on the Saturday night, because even it doesn't take very long for me to get ready, but actually seven of us all trying to get ready with one bathroom, you know, it'll take a while. And also I'll just buy loads of gin so everyone can just have drinks when they're getting ready. And I'm just trying to make it a relaxed affair for that bit rather than trying to cram another bar in before we go back or whatever. So yeah, I've already mainly planned it, but actually reading this piece has reassured me because I haven't really done one on my own before haven't been to very many either because most of my mates were not married yet. So reading this piece was reassuring. So the tips are pre-book as much as possible, which I've essentially done. Get the balance right, which is, again, the don't spread yourself out too far.
Can I just interrupt on that?
Please.
Like, I really, really feel that of all the hands I've been on, like, the best time, that the most enjoyable part is the downtime part. It's either the pre-drinks or the when you're all just, like, chilling in one place.
Yeah.
I had one in London and it was two nights, actually, so we were, like, together for quite a lot of time. And, there were activities, but the funnest bits were just everyone just, like, lying in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Particularly
yeah.
with close girlfriends as well. Like, it's really special time. Otherwise get.
I think this group, they're all from different walks of life. You don't necessarily know each other, but I still think for the Friday night, we're going to stay in, like, order pizza.
That's so nice.
She loves gin, so we're all going to bring loads of different types and just do it ourselves. But I think it'll be a great bonding.
Definitely.
That's how we'll all get to know each other.
And also, if it's starting on a Friday night, particularly, like, people have been at work all day, they've been at work all week. And so rather than had a mix of everything, but the ones where you have a force to kind of get on it on the Friday night are quite hard work.
Yeah,
just not in that place.
Precisely.
So better to, and also, better to to build up to the big night as well. In my experience, if you're doing two nights, you need to build momentum, because if you do your big night the first night, then the second night everyone's like, well, why are we still here?
You're right, or they're hungover. Yeah, that's all very reassuring. Thank you. But yeah,
what else is on the list?
So stay calm. Tensions can run high when it comes to Hindus. Again, nothing bad's happened yet, so I'm just waiting for someone to eventually be like, that's too expensive, and then it all goes a bit wrong. But for now, because the one thing I haven't done or didn't do was set a budget, because I just had no idea how much anything was going to cost. But instead, we've just been sort of paying for the odd bits since January. So every month, people have had to give me sort of 40 quid here and there every couple of months. So I feel like doing it that way meant that hopefully it doesn't seem that much if people are just kind of slinging a bit of money here and there, rather than me being like, right, everyone give me £500 when I hadn't even booked anything or knew. And so far, I think it's okay.
I've so often had that where it's like, okay, hi, can you transfer £200 by the end of the week? And by the way, it's Thursday now. Like, I get that all the time, and it is so irritating. Yeah. I won this month, it was the 15th. It's like, well, that is nowhere near either payday. Like,
no.
So I think taking small money in small increments from people is kinder.
Or I've been whacking it on my credit card and being like, don't worry, guys, just pay me after payday, sort of thing.
Yeah. That is something I wouldn't do.
I have to say, I wouldn't do that either. No, that's kind of you, but...
Like, people, in my experience, drop out and then they won't pay you.
Well, so far, I think everyone's paid not so much, but they paid a large proportion. If they did drop out, then they're idiot.
Yeah. Also, probably the fact that there's only seven of you.
Exactly.
People are less likely to drop out because they know that they're kind of quite
And
important.
One of them's her mum. You know, one of them's me. So actually, it's only really five people that I'm having to sort of... And also, there's a sneaky separate WhatsApp group, as there always is, that my friend who's getting married arranged with two of her most forceful mates. And so I've been running ideas past them first. I don't even know them, but running stuff past them. And then they basically, when I've suggested something to the group, they've instantly been like, sounds amazing.
You've got spies on the inside.
That's been super handy.
You do need a force of nature in a group when you're planning a hindu. You need someone to literally make those decisions.
I'm not a natural, like, right, everyone do what I want to do. So I am finding it quite
unusual.
Maybe
that's why I'm so good at planning hens. Pascal, what's your experience? Have you planned hens before?
I did plan one hen party last year, and I think I learned a lot from it. I wouldn't go abroad again.
No.
We went abroad because the bride wanted to go abroad. So what I learned, first of all, was to make sure everyone's on board with the plan, because I thought everyone was on board with the plan. We were going to go to Marbella, and I was like, is everyone okay with this? And everyone was like, yep. And I just took that to be, yes, we are going to go to Marbella. So when it came to the point where I was like, right, I've looked at everything, it's going to cost this much, then everyone started kicking off and being like, well, I didn't know it was going to be this much. I wasn't in full agreement to this. And I was like, but we were.
He's like, but you
so are. It was
no
kind of like,
no.
I would want everyone to, you know, maybe I'd do that a bit earlier, work out the finances earlier and be like, what does everyone think of this? Give me a strong answer of yes or no. And if you don't want to do it, say no, because we want to come up with something that's works for everyone. And I think just keeping it simple. Like, I had a great time, we all had a great time, but it was just such a nightmare to plan everything.
Doing it with flights and everything, I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
And then everyone's messaging me separately, being like, I don't want to say this in the group, but I think this, and I can't afford this.
People
and I
become
like,
so independent
my God.
As well. Oh, what time are we meeting?
Oh, my God.
Oh, what time is
this?
Oh, what time is
You know, when you've said something like three times, and then they're like, sorry, when are we doing this? It's like, scroll up. Scroll up in the message.
What's next? It doesn't matter. It will be nice.
So I think I just wouldn't go abroad again, and I would try and just keep it more simple. And I think people have a better time then. Like, my boyfriend went on a stag party recently, and he said that every single moment was planned, and it was like, we're getting up this time, we're doing this, then we're going here, then we're doing this, and it was like, it was just too much.
No boys like that. That is impressive.
No. But it was all very manly stuff, like, you know, shooting guns and then I'm going to go to the strip club and stuff like that. So it was like regimented but very
organized.
Gross stuff. So I think just keep it simple, just for your own sanity.
Becky, anything to add?
So I'm currently planning my best friend's next year. Hers isn't till next year. We have more time, and I am incredibly lucky that her maid of honor is her sister, so we're kind of doing it together, and we have found somewhere. And the best thing I would say is, if you do kind of know where you want to go, do get in touch with with them as soon as you can because you're more likely to get a deal. And we have been able to get a massive discount because of how early we've got in touch. And also, we did her sister's hen do last year and that was abroad. And I think the one thing I learned is, A, you have to be a massive yes person.
Mm-hmm,
so many people on that hen do suddenly were like, we were all like, oh, we're going wine tasting now. And people would just be like, oh, I don't want to come.
Yeah, yeah. You can't show that you don't like that.
So you have to be a yes person. If you're a participant.
If you're going, you're going.
So do it for the bride, even if you hate the person who's organised it and they've been militant and stolen all your money.
Exactly, you're there for the bride. So I think that's one of my biggest things. And I think also, like you said, just say if you don't want to do something rather than beat around the bush, because it wastes everybody's time. You end up losing deals, you end up losing money. So I think that's what I have learned so far. But again, yeah, keep it simple, keep it fun. And I think the one thing I saw in this, which I think is really true, is keep the bride involved to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's like, what extent do you go
to? She has no idea where we're going, but she kind of wanted to know that we're going to have a communal space. Like, I think little things just for them to know that they can plan ahead.
Particularly if you're a bride as well who's been on a few, so you might have some prerequisites.
Yeah.
So if the bride likes to eat healthy food, then don't just serve pizza the whole weekend. Yeah. Consider the bride. But also the other thing is that I really think that sort of more importantly than the bride is everybody else on this hen. The bride hasn't paid. She'll have a fun time, you know, as long as all her friends are game and up for it. Yeah. But it can dampen a hen even behind the scenes when people feel like, you know, whatever it is, that they can't see where their money's gone or they haven't been fed properly or where they're staying is revolting, you know, whatever it is. So I think you have to really be catering for all these people.
Everyone.
For the masses, as opposed to, well, it's fine because XYZ will love it, but what about 15 other people who are there?
Yeah, because they're never cheap, are they? Let's be honest. Yeah. Even the simplest ones.
Yeah.
Because you are paying a little bit extra each time for everything for the bride. It does add up.
But I always just try and think, like, when it comes to my hen party, I would want people to put in the effort for me. And that's what I think every time, like if I go to one abroad or if I go to one, you know, anywhere, I'll always be like, I'm going to put in the most effort and, you know, have a really good time, do whatever they want us to do. Because when it comes to my hen party, if people didn't, I'd be heartbroken if people were like, you know, didn't take part or didn't come or couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. It's the same with weddings as well. I feel like you've got to like show up.
Yeah.
There are some people who at our wedding were just like, didn't need to be life and soul. Like, it's not best friends, but like friends who were there who were like such good value. And I feel so ready to pay it forward at their weddings actually. And really surprised by it.
People who hit the dance floor with real enthusiasm early, or they're just smiling the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. People who spoke to parents or, you know, people who were really polite or went the extra mile or had the best time. That's like whether it's hen or wedding, like I think you do really appreciate that when it comes to
I would so agree.
Yeah. Okay, well, there are more tips in this piece, including stay calm, guys. Remember to stay calm.
Yeah.
Choose the right accommodation. I think that's so true. And actually, my biggest tip on that, as you say, about shared communal space is so important. I've been in ones in hotels and they just don't work as effectively because in that downtime, everybody like splits off and you don't get that like vibe. So definitely don't go to a hotel. Go somewhere where there's some kind of space to all be together. And pre-book as much as possible. Well, I mean, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? You just rock up somewhere. We've got some great, really helpful tips in there as well as advice for keeping cool when you're planning home. I think that's just about all we've got time for this week. If you've got any feedback at all, please do email podcast@sheerlux.com. We love hearing from you. Also, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.